Russian disappeared. Invisible.
This thing could park a couple of hundred warheads off Washington and New York.
Stolen.
He's defecting.
The Russians know this, which is why they've been trying to sink him for the past 2 days.
The hunt is on.
Now you want us to help you hunt him down and kill him.
Battle stations.
Give the man a chance.
From the director of Die Hard.
Torpedo is an acquisition!
From the best-selling novel by Tom Clancy.
We sail into history.
The Hunt for Red October, March 2nd.
Down! To save his family,
Sean Miller escaped.
Jack Ryan must play a deadly game.
I don't care what you have to do, you just get him.
Harrison Ford, Patriot Games.
The critics love danger. Rolling Stone calls it the summer's smartest thriller.
Who authorized this operation?
Gripping, fast, and first rate, raves the New York Times.
Back up!
CBS TV says provocative. It has intensity and excitement. Yeah! And the Los Angeles Times calls it the best Clancy film yet.
If I go down, you're going with me.
Harrison Ford, Clear and Present Danger, rated PG-13, now playing.
Tom Clancy, Slowly I Turned.
Slowly he turned.
no one gets that joke anymore.
Should they?
I don't know.
Why
slowly
don't
I turned, step by step. Whatever. I don't even remember what it's from. I just remember, you know.
First step. So we're talking about plenty of toy soldiers here on Tom Clancy. We are talking about his books, his movies, his radical style, his military expertise, his influence. And so it's kind of interesting. I saw that just like so many authors would kind of reference him in many ways. Like there was this one author who, I forget his name, but he did this one novel called By Dawn's Early Light, which is basically like a World War III scenario, if you know.
Which is, it's Red Storm Rising, basically.
Pretty much. If everything were to be compromised and just like the world goes to shit, the president can't dictate, he's incapacitated or whatever, and there's people kind of like
hitting kind of close to home these days.
Oh, yeah. Misinterpreting orders, military coups, and one, I remember skimming through some of the book before I saw that awesome HBO TV movie, and it briefly in the book it says, it's like, this sounds like something out of the Hunt for Red October. And I think the guy says, I read the book or the movie, you get the gist. And I'm like, that's funny.
Yeah.
Because that adaptation came out like a year after they did the first adaptation, Hunt for Red October, in 1990. And I was like, interesting.
Yeah. You know, so,
what was that introduction?
That was probably it. It was probably Hunt for October with Connery and Baldwin. And I started reading the Clancy books after that. I read Hunt for October. That movie was pretty, I thought, relatively faithful to the book. And then I remember, but that wasn't the first book I read. So
yeah.
I saw the movie, and I remember being at the store, and there was a video game out called Red Storm Rising, and it was said by Tom Clancy. And it came with the novel Red Storm Rising, which I believe was the first book he wrote. So
same
I bought
deal.
The game. Huh?
Same kind of deal. I too, yeah. Saw Red October first. I waited a while on the other ones because they were like, you know, higher ratings, you know, like
yeah,
hard PG-13s, Rs or whatever. And
see, my dad didn't care about that. So like,
I was eight.
It's like, hey, look, Friday the 13th's on. Let's watch it. It's like, great, Dad. I'm not sure about
yeah,
this.
And these so. Movies weren't violent enough to where they couldn't not get played on any kind of TV channel, whether it was UPN or TNT.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A&E, you were going to see them one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much to cut out of them. I mean, the books are a little more graphic in
just
some of the
scenes.
Language. But yeah, so I saw the so I played Red Storm Rising, which was basically like you were in a nuclear submarine. You had like the sonar screen, and you could track other subs, and you'd fire and have yeah. And you'd, you know, track the torpedoes
was in
and stuff.
88.
The game?
The computer game. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I probably played the game before the Hunt for Red October came out then. You're right. The game was like older. Yeah. So actually my first introduction was the game, then the movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but those are the two first things I remember. I remember loving Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan. I thought he was perfect. I kind of didn't recognize him
in that role at time. And then when you see the other movies, it takes you a minute to realize, Ryan is the same character that
your
actors played.
And then Connery,
you thought, okay, is Connery leading it? And
that was, it was Baldwin.
You're right. I know. But you just
look at the cover. Yeah, exactly.
And I just watched it with like my grandmother one day because, you know, she was all into mystery and everything. And my father had, this was back when people were starting to watch movies on a computer, you know, on a laptop in early 2000s. And it was just so funny how half the time we would go out of town strategically and we'd have to figure out what to do because, you know, not everyone wanted to play Uno or play a bland game. And, you know, you couldn't do it. It was hard because sometimes we would go out of town, but we were just doing chores all day. And when you're a growing up kid, you're not mature. You're not sure what you want to do. And at the same time, you kind of, it's weird. You got to just figure out. At that time, I was learning how to, that I was becoming kind of a movie buff, but I wasn't, I was slowly learning how to be kind of more discreet and less overbearing in my geekiness and trying to figure out how to like articulate what was on my mind. And it stank too, because like when you're in a bunch of siblings, everyone's at different ages and not everyone wants to watch the same things. And so this was also just one of those things. My father would have probably been a bigger, you know, into this, but he was just so busy working at that time. And my mother just often wanted a dumb comedy or didn't want to do anything too serious unless it was something easy like Star Wars. And it's like, so, and I just kind of wanted to see anything that was like a big special effects extravaganza. And, you know, this, that first movie, Red October, that was, I definitely was my first movie I saw that had to do with submarine or military warfare. And I just thought it was cool that all these movies had just like giant Star Wars actors in them. And, you know, here's James Earl Jones is the main Joint Chiefs guy. And I just thought it was just so pulse pounding, and I didn't understand it all, but I kind of did at the same time, if that makes sense. It's a very easy to get into movie.
Yeah, it is. And if you were, so it's funny because like there's a slight age difference between you and me. So when I saw it, the Cold War hadn't quite ended yet either.
No.
Right? So, like, I'm playing Red Storm Rising, like you said, 88, 89. I'm watching Hunt for October in 90, the Cold War. You know, it's, I grew up very much a Cold War kid. That's why today Russia's saying, oh, if you we'll threaten the U.S., fuck you. We lived through 60 years of it.
Right.
Go for it. You know, it doesn't bother me.
And then, yeah.
Because I'm used to the saber rattling from both sides. I'm used to, like, we know, we already know how things are going to play out to some extent, you know, but, and it's because of novels written by guys like him, because he was such a strategist and such a military analyst and stuff that those books shadowed stuff very well at the time. Right.
Oh, 1,000%.
And they still do, you know, I will say, so when I saw the movie, like I said, it was definitely a little earlier than you. I loved Red October. I thought it was fantastic. And I read Patriot Games. And
director John McTiernan's loose sequel to Die Hard in a way.
It was almost Die Hard on a sub. Well, it wasn't thinking or nothing, but yeah.
Kind of got those kind of gist of it. They always got kind of a fight, a fail safe or some kind of 70s disaster movie kind of
thing. Yeah. So then I remember reading was it Patriot Games I read next? It had to be Patriot Games. And I love the book, but the whole time I'm picturing Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan. Then they announced the movie and they show Harrison Ford. And I'm like, I like Han Solo. I like Indiana Jones. I like Harrison Ford. Like
his third I don't most major like, yeah.
But I'm like, I don't like him in this movie. And I watched the movie and I did not like him in the movie. Because even at that point, and not to say old per se, but he was probably mid-40s, late 50s by the time he made Patriot Games.
He's and like there were one scenes of the in that few actors who like when he did kind of certain roles, like he kind of did roles that is like were very kind of somewhat uncommon for a leading man, like without what's the courtroom movie he did? It's a bestseller, Scott Turrell.
You're talking about the one with the, not the Amish kid one. You're talking about
not Witness. Although that's an unusual one for him too. Presumed Innocent. Yeah.
Okay.
And Mosquito Coast and.
Yeah, Mosquito Coast was a bizarre movie that my stepfather made us watch. Oh, you need to watch this because one day it's like
Blade Runner. He's playing a futuristic detective, and that kind of made me actually get into detective movies in a way.
But to be fair, Blade Runner fits him. And Han Solo fit him, and Indiana Jones fit him for me, and some of his other roles. Sadly, Jack Ryan did not, because there's scenes in the movie, Patriot Games, that to me, he looked like old and frail. Now, I know, like I said, he was only a couple years older than I am now. I get it. But going from jet black-haired Alec Baldwin, who was maybe in his 30s at the time, to a much older actor, at the time, right? I think there's a decent age gap between those two.
At least 10 years, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, allergies.
All good.
I really did not work for me, you know? And it's like... A lot of the movie I liked recently,
and I think the biggest issue is that he doesn't have enough to do. Is like, everyone kind of overshadows him.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that. So Baldwin is 64 right now, right? And Harrison Ford is...
Oh, he's got to be at least in his 80s now, right?
Harrison Ford is 79.
Jesus.
So, I mean, there was a 20-age gap between these two for the most part. 15. And, yeah, it just didn't work for me. And I kind of turned off to it a little bit. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to keep reading the books. And I read Clear and Present Danger and Some of All Fears, and then... the Clear and Present Danger movie came out, and one of the greatest parts of the book was the introduction of Clark.
Yeah, you know? John Clark.
John Clark is of Rainbow Six, yeah. Yep. And Clark is a fantastic character. He's a great character. And then I'm like, awesome, they're making Clear and Present Danger movie. I'm like, well, I'm not a fan of Harrison Ford in it, but fine, I'll give that one a shot. And then I see William Dafoe playing John Clark. And I'm like, John Clark is like 6'6", African-American, and like built. William Dafoe looks like
they should have just made Sam Jackson's minor character, Robbie Jackson, the character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, that's like, wow. And in my head, now when they talk about like, when they talk about whitewashing Hollywood, now it's like, well, you really showed it then.
Yeah.
An African-American character and use like the whitest dude you could find.
And it's interesting. I always had trouble getting into like the Clear and Present Danger book, but the movie I think is actually kind of my favorite of the movies. I think Red October is the best one, definitely. But like Clear and Present Danger, there's like a lot of just interesting, just moody suspense, just with lighting and everything that I like about it. And it was definitely the first thing I saw all those actors that were in the adaptation in. Miguel Sandoval is the one drug czar who's betrayed. I associated him and was never surprised when I saw him often as like a CIA guy or cartel guy or detective. And yeah, William Dafoe, you know, obviously he was in other well-known stuff later on, like Spider-Man. And
yeah, I think part of the reason he was cast as that character was he was in Platoon. I mean, he played a soldier before.
That's totally why he got it. It wasn't all those great Paul Schrader, you know, noirs and character studies. It was that. And it took you a while to realize the guy playing Sniper Chavez, you know, is Raymond Cruz. You're like, oh my God, that's... And what a career he had, just playing Detective Sanchez on the Closer shows, as well as Tuco and the Breaking Bad saga. So it's just like... He got his work cut out there, and I pretty much that in Under Siege, I was never surprised when I saw him in something like Substitute or The Rock or Broken Arrow, often playing a military personnel instead of what every other Latino actor seemed to be offered, which was, you know, gangbanger roles out the wazoo, you know. And just the rescue scenes and the scores, I just think it's just, it still holds up from what I recently resaw it. You okay? You okay there, Johnny?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh. I was going to say, I was never really a huge Harrison Ford fan in that movie, in those movies, like I said, but it was a good movie. And it was a relevant movie to the time, too.
Totally.
You know, and I remember... Go ahead.
In fact, I actually saw it during, I think, George Bush's, like, first year. We were just kind of just seeing how...
You mean the second Bush? Remember, I had to live through two of them.
Yeah, Junior. And I think it was interesting because when you talk Tom Clancy, generally everyone's kind of seen Red October and Patriot Games, but not everyone seems to have seen Clear and Present Danger, even though it's played on TV quite a lot. So it was interesting. I just saw it in a crowd back in the day, like 2000s, with some people had seen it many times because they were big fans of director Philip Noyce, who was best known for the horror mystery Dead Calm. And,
oh, okay, yeah.
But yeah, most people just kind of, like you say, they kind of, Harrison Ford in a way, like just how he's featured on the poster kind of hurts the movie. And I know that's just the marketing department, but yeah, you kind of expect Han Solo, Indiana Jones, and you're just like, but it's not that kind of movie. It's a, you know, and there's so many other similar movies that were coming out at around that, you know, those same times, mm-hmm. Pelican Brief. And
yeah, I mean, it was the 90s were rife with adaptions from best-selling books. I mean,
if it wasn't Stephen King, man, he's got,
yeah, it was, well, I mean, even like you had how many Stephen King ones? You had Tom Clancy ones, Clive Cussler's, was it Sahara? That was, yeah, I think, Clive late Cussler, 90s.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they made two or three of his books in the films, and he didn't like any of the adaptions. I liked them both because he wrote Raise the Titanic and he wrote Sahara, and he did not like the films. I rather enjoyed both. I didn't think they were masterpieces, but they were good.
He's kind of like comic book writer Alan Moore or even Stephen King himself. They're just too close to their work to where they're not able to really form any real constructive criticism towards, like, and I've had this a lot with many other people who hate if just something is not like the books. Like, I, for instance, don't care for the new Hobbit movies, but it has nothing to do with them not being like the books. It's just that I have issues with just the production quality or how they pace themselves and how there's a lot of dead space. And it's like, it says a lot for a book that's very slow moving, but there isn't really any dead space. And so it's interesting how, I don't know, other people don't seem to realize when you're doing a script, you know, all that action that you see, you know, those are just various takes and stuff that they, you know, stage on a storyboard. It's not going to, you know, what lasts maybe half a page is going to probably be 3 minutes of film. You know, you don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's when I was trying to write scripts, is what they said was like, one page equals 1 to 3 minutes of film. Right. If it's dialogue, it's 1 minute of dialogue. If it's, you know, something to that effect.
And film school failed me because they really weren't talking about blocking or staging much. It's like, had I known that, I would have done a way better job because I was always kind of a visual guy. I was always, and I think all these movies we're going to talk about today, I think, they're very visual as much as they can be because they kept hiring people who were good with doing suspense and then could hire some people to come in and shoot some action scenes.
Yeah. And I think after we had Clear and Present Danger, we had Some of All Fears, right?
Right.
So now book wise though, you had Debt of Honor first, I think. No, Debt of Honor came out after. It was Some of All Fears.
Then. Yeah. It was The Cardinal of the Kremlin, which was the sequel to Red October.
Right.
Where John Clark first appears, but yeah.
Yeah. And Debt of Honor, I think they're working on right now, right? With Michael B. Jordan?
I would not be surprised we'll get to that.
But yeah.
Basically, Summer All Fears is just like, came out in 91.
It's like a prequel.
basically. It had Palestinian and East German terrorists, and when they came out with the movie, it was like they had to downplay a lot of the Islamic terrorism and basically just change it up a bit. And I think that makes sense because, you know, Israelis unfortunately are, friends of, the U.S., even though, as we've seen recently, they like to instigate a lot of things with Palestinian. And
yeah, no, I mean, but I think that adaption-wise, other than downplaying that to some extent, I think the movie was done well, you know?
I was kind of meh at first. It was one of those, I didn't have a problem watching it, but then I just saw how so many other people kind of hated on it, so I kind of, I don't want to say I kind of surrendered. I just kind of didn't talk about it much because I just saw what negative response was.
Yeah, you're not gonna stop the tidal wave, you know.
Yeah, I was just like, look that I beat your dog, then I should just stop mentioning it. But I kept rewatching it on occasion, and I did see it back like maybe 5 years back, and I still have a lot of fun with it, even though I know many others. This was back when Ben Affleck was an internet punching bag.
So that was my biggest problem with it. I don't really like Ben Affleck. Now, not as a person, but I remember watching Mallrats, and he's in it, and he plays a douchebag. And then I remember, like, every role he had was almost that same character.
Yeah,
post-Kevin you're like, Smith. Hey, here. Then you're like, hey, here's a new Jack Ryan, Ben Affleck. I'm like, no. I'm like, no.
It was interesting because, like, he was another one of those actors who.
But he had the look that I preferred in the age group. But I'm like, no, I can't do it.
Pretty much for me, he was just kind of he and Matt Damon. You know, after Good Will Hunting, that was their, you know, burst on the scene. And you know, after Kevin Smith and
talk about two separate trajectories too.
Totally, it's like Damon was like hit after hit. You know. Do an animated movie here and there, and then do
action films, non-action films. I mean,
yeah, just giant
Ocean's 11.
Yeah, Ocean's 11, Saving Private Ryan, just a bunch of other just mystery and military movies. You know, even bit parts that everyone forgot he was in that he was good in, like freaking Courage Under Fire. And
yeah,
so and you know, Affleck is just getting a bunch of Michael Bay's, you know, blockbusters.
Here's Daredevil.
Yeah, Daredevil. And, oh, now I'm a director, but it's not going to wipe away the stench that was, you know, Jiggly. And it was like,
See, now that one I actually didn't mind, oddly enough. But how many movies did he make where he's a Boston cop or he's, you know, down on his luck, law enforcement office, something? He made so many like that.
Kind of. It was hard to
like
keep every, up with
they're them. Like, oh, did you see what he's directing now? I'm like, is he a Boston cop? Well, no, it's not in Boston, but how do you know he was a cop? It's what he does. It's like his wheelhouse. And then they said he was going to be Batman. I'm like, well, that sucks.
And then his brother, Casey, has his own scandal, and you're like, yes, but he's kind of like the more immature version of Ben. So it's like,
I did have to eat a little crow on that, though, because as much as I was against Affleck being Batman, watching him as Batman, I actually didn't mind him. I thought he was good enough as Batman. Because, like, here's the thing. Everyone judges Batman actors, and they're always like, oh, this guy sucked at it. Well, did they suck at Batman or Bruce Wayne? Because that's the problem. You need to cast an actor that's going to play two separate roles.
Oh, totally. And
I think Affleck did solid as both.
And by the time we got to the 2010s, man, like, people have to realize, in the earliest days of the internet and, you know, still just, we still had physical newspapers that, you know, people get, you know, mailed to their doorstep.
We didn't have any of this like instant Hollywood news.
We didn't really know how everything was kind of working, you know, like we had ideas that we had heard since like the 60s on like when it came to politics and corporations, but we still like like you just said right there, you know, we didn't know how much of it was you're a good actor versus you were only good in one movie versus you're good in certain roles versus, well, just the script and direction was all wrong. And it was always hard for me because, you know, I'd sneak in, you know, I didn't really have any taste in quality, but I watched a bit of everything. I would always just have cable TV on and I'd just be seeing all kinds of just dorky movies, some that were very well remembered, some that were overrated, some that were long forgotten, but kind of sleeper hits. And I was just so used to knowing about all kinds of things and themes. And, you know, when you get into movies, you know, I was always just kind of visually drawn to movies. So it was always interesting how you'd see a movie that it takes you a while to realize, like, okay, I see what a lot of people see in this that they reject versus they accept, you know?
Yeah, I think the internet, though, has made certain aspects of movie viewing worse because...
Oh, yes.
Because what happens is now, and like, the movie hasn't even come out yet, and you'll have, like, a core group of people start, oh, this movie's going to suck.
And trailers, and then,
it
just,
and then everybody hops on it, as long as that person has something in common with them, and mm-hmm. everyone hates on it before it even comes out. You're like, dude.
And like,
you know, perfect example of that. And maybe if you didn't like it, you didn't like it. That's fine. But the Han Solo movie, like before it even came out, people were tearing it to shreds about the casting, about all kinds of shit. And I hate to say it, if that movie's on, I'll watch it because it wasn't a Star Wars movie.
You know, anytime you're replacing someone, oh, how dare you? And if
you're going to CGI him 40 years younger.
And if you ask someone to come back and reprise a role, oh, cash grab. So you already instantly lose that battle.
And the guy that played Solo, I thought actually he was much better than I thought he'd be. The guy that played Lando, fantastic. Not Michael B. Jordan. It's I can't think of his name.
Donald Glover.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's not also a
comedian.
Yeah.
He is he's a hilarious comedian. He played Lando Calrissian fantastically. But, you know, they're in like one part, they're in like in mines and it's dark. And everyone's like, oh, that movie's so dark. I'm like, they're in a mine. Like, what do you expect? Like, and I liked it because it didn't focus on the main story. It was a heist. It was they're trying to steal something and make the name for themselves as smugglers. And part of it was fateful to the books I read from the expanded universe, too. Like, little parts of it. Not a lot, but parts of it. I'm like, the amount of trash that movie got. And then I'm like, Ron Howard did a fantastic job. And everyone's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, he had to reshoot like 60% of that movie. And if that's what he came up with, I want Ron Howard to do more Star Wars because I thought he did a great job. But that's the problem. Like, you have the internet and you have all these Facebook groups and pages and blogs and vlogs and all this. And everyone's bombarded with the trailers and then what they're supposed to think of it by other people before it even comes out and they even see it.
Most of these movies came out at probably the best time where everything was in studio because
exactly
like
you didn't have that
96-97. That's when they started hiring companies to sell movies for them, so that's why you had all these in your face the summer on Fox, you know, and just yep. you know, coming to NBC, you know, it's like, and just other just like Paramount did a bunch of tech thrillers, and you know, Universal and Disney would have, you know, a lot of epic trailer voices, and you never knew what you were really getting yourself into. And
but because the internet wasn't the way it is now, you still had to go see the movie before you judged it.
And you know, you want to talk superheroes. I mean, when I saw the Superman Lives documentary, how they talked about how no one really understood how to make superhero movies during the 90s, and some of the best stuff still remained unmade. Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, who now works like for Summit and Paramount, you know, he's best known for stuff like the G.I. Joe and Transformers franchises, but as well as movies like Salt and Shooter. And he basically talked about he was like co-chairman of like the assistant like marketing for Warner Brothers, and it's like no one knew how to do anything, even when they had hits like The Matrix. And he's like, so basically they just always just left him to die. I look at it now, I'm like, that's ridiculous. They owned Time Warner, owned, you know, Rotten Tomatoes at the time, and they just, all their movies would flop and they'd make most of their money back on HBO airings. It's like, that's ridiculous.
You know, and it's funny too, because like one of the most successful and probably to this day, one of the best superhero movies, quote unquote, came out in the 90s, Blade.
Yeah.
Blade is what that movie being successful saved Marvel from going under. Like Marvel was on the verge of bankruptcy, and then they marketed like they sold the rights to Blade and Daredevil and I think X-Men or something to Fox, and that movie hit big enough that they're like, oh, we can stay afloat by selling rights off. But for some reason, that movie was good. And then I thought the sequels were good, but outside of the Blade universe in the 90s, early 2000s, anything else that was, that came out was not good.
Yeah. Spawn, cough, cough.
Yeah. Yeah. But back to Clancy stuff. So
we're adapting bestsellers that are nail biters. So I want to thank one of the main producers who just kind of oversaw all the movies until his death in 2022. And it is Mark Neufeld. Now, I find it interesting because he'd also already done The Frisco Kid as one of many Harrison Ford movies, The Omen, and its first sequel. And from that point on, he kind of submitted a few movies to like New World Pictures, including the 80s Punisher. But I find it interesting how he kind of was already on a spree, because around the same time he was doing, you know, the Clancy adaptations, he was also doing stuff like No Way Out, The General's Daughter, and Gods and Generals, and then later did the Equalizer movies with Denzel Washington, as well as your favorite, Sahara. So, you know, so I find that interesting how he was kind of on a spree there. No one else got that. In the 90s, who would you have thought? You would have probably thought Jerry Bruckheimer or Joel Silver or Arnold Copleson, you know, who did stuff like The Fugitive. It's like, no, this guy, he gets it.
You know, that's the funny thing. Harrison Ford in The Fugitive, perfectly believable. And that was an action film too.
And but for whatever reason, it kind of wrecked his career in a way, because like it helped his career, but it also, everyone after that time were like, oh, what's going to happen now? Is he going to save a woman or be accused of killing him? You know?
Well, that's a good point.
But yeah, it's definitely his most dynamite role too. And made Tommy Lee Jones be realized as more than just a B-movie actor. But yeah, it's so funny.
Sad thing is the second one, U.S. Marshals, almost as good, but because Harrison Ford wasn't in it, it didn't get to watch the same, you know.
And that's where we get
it. It could have spawned an entire series of movies.
I was so used to just waking up first thing in the morning seeing those, if not a rerun of, say, Star Trek or The X-Files on TV first thing in the morning. It was just the go-to for Spike TV or FX or whatever. And it's just so funny how we're seeing it like post like Taken, Man on Fire type movies, and people do the whole, oh, they're old. I'm like, but you had no problem seeing Harrison Ford or even a Wesley Snipes type, you know, avoid danger. And yet those guys are an exception. So it seems like, I guess, get too infatuated and annoyed by repeats. And so,
well, I think in like Liam Neeson's case, so you're talking about an actor that really didn't do many action movies. So by the time he finally did, everyone's like, well, too bad he didn't start sooner, you know?
Yeah. Here and there, like Rob Roy, Darkman in Star Wars. And then he does these, but it's kind of weird because it's like, I don't know, like, sometimes people want it in one circumstance and then they don't in others. Like there's a crowd, for instance, for like the Expendables, but I see people complain at them and yet they have no problem if they see something in a, say, Fast and Furious or.
I always thought the Expendables was an exception to that because of the fact they don't take themselves. It doesn't take itself serious.
I would have thought that was the case.
But there are people out there, but that's today's world. People out there are like, totally. this isn't filmmaking. It's like, not to you, but to someone that grew up watching all these guys blow stuff up with giant explosions and take out an island full of mercenaries by themselves, this is entertainment.
1,000%. And I see people complain at an Equalizer, Taken type movie with stuff that also happens in like a John Wick type movie, and they don't have a problem with John Wick. And some of these same people are the kind who love to shit on Keanu Reeves. And you're like, I think the post 90s at this point, like basically you just had to be very low key and the right audience would find your movie. And these Clancy movies basically just, they were going to basically be for, they're like the rare mixture of like for young adults and not violent enough to where you wouldn't mind taking a teen to it. And older people will like it too, because they grew up with anything, whether it's the Rifleman or something like combat, you know.
Well, plus they grew up with espionage kind of things too, right? Like, I mean, yeah. James Bond, for lack of a better example, But the 60s were rife with like secret agent movies. Lots of chunks of these are like that. I mean, it's about espionage and the spy game, only in a more serious manner.
He who controls all information controls the world.
We're in.
Very nice.
What is this?
No idea. But we're losing power. I think his rig might be going down.
America's master of intrigue and suspense, Tom Clancy, is about to propel you into the 21st century. Net Force.
Somebody's been hijacking the net big time, and they're not leaving much of a fingerprint.
NetForce mandate is to police the internet.
It's time to came in through the satellite, so whatever you're doing down there, it ain't working, boy.
I don't need an official notice of reprimand.
I'll be the judge of what's needed, Commander Day.
I want you to take out the commander of NetForce.
Get out of here.
Mayday, mayday, there's something on the fire.
Do you know who you murdered?
Net Force is now under your command.
Maybe somewhere in the recesses of Steve's digital life we can find the answers.
Alex, you can't raise the dead.
I can damn well try.
I want whoever did this on the rack. No mercy.
They need your leadership, Alex.
One name showed up at the top of 9/11 lists. Will Stiles,
the president's friend.
He's getting too close.
He'd hold the world hostage,
destroy international monetary standards, and change the entire balance of world power.
I need access to a certain Washington building.
I think what you're dealing with here is technology that's advanced faster than our ability to voice it.
Those bad boys take over anyway. You are going to be in a world of hurt.
I am sending the White House false data confirming the president's dirty return.
Somebody's hacking in right now.
Very nice.
If you like that, watch this.
Scott Bakula, Joanna Goeing, Kris Kristofferson, and Brian Dennehy star in Tom Clancy's Net Force. From Trimark Home Video, rated R.
Kathy, I can't make it tonight.
Tell her who you work for.
I work for the CIA.
That is so lame.
From the best-selling thriller by Tom Clancy.
A neo-fascist bought an A-bomb on the black market. Cut him off!
Ben Affleck.
I think it might be the Russians.
It wasn't the Russians!
Morgan Freeman.
It adds up. You just don't like what it adds up to.
The bomb is in play!
The Sum of All Fears, directed by Phil Robinson. Rated PG-13. Starts Friday, May 31st.
It's like Paramount didn't know what to do after Harrison's last movie, and then Sum of All Fears kind of came and went, let's see what the budget was for that. So that was, okay, $68 million, and it made decent money back, $193.9 million. And so often I just saw people laugh it off.
Yeah.
I think it's, you could probably blame 9/11. Even though they had repushed it back. But I think it was just, at that point, it was just a little too confusing for everyone at that point to follow. Like, because it was already confusing enough that everyone was like, oh, okay, so is it a prequel or is it, it's kind of a mild reboot?
Yeah, that was an issue with switching around the actors, right? You had a young actor, Alec Baldwin, you had a middle-aged actor, Harrison Ford, then you went back to a young actor. Then you sat on the series for a while nothing but video games came out. Because I remember Op Center came out, right? The books and Rainbow Six
it was
books
like
came
a
out.
TV movie. And
yeah.
In
the early 90s, there was an Op Center TV movie.
I take it you also saw Net Force with Scott Bakula.
You know what? I didn't. I do know it was based on that
it's
as
like,
well.
Clancy did like a series of those, but those were kind of like his James Patterson Presents kind of thing. It was like, I'm putting my name on it. I contributed the idea and I'm going to get
it. I came up with the idea of NetForce. You guys run with it.
The other assholes can write it and I'll make money either way. And it's like they did a two-part TV movie and it was one of those. It's like it's kind of a spot the, you know, grade B actor villain from a Lethal Weapon kind of thing. And then, or Terminator. And then near the end, basically the White House gets ambushed and an evil CIA guy, Kris Kristofferson, is the real guy pulling the strings. And of course, Scott Bakula gets wounded and shoots him dead. But it's kind of interesting, even though it has some very hackneyed editing, and you know, it has 80s kind of rock music playing in the 90s to where it's something they would do in the 90s, where basically this is like everything had to, I don't know if it's just like they were in NYPD blue homicide.
It's like, it's like cheesy porn music playing to it.
Yeah, it's like got to have some hard rock music just to make a stance, as if that makes up for the cliches. And it's like, you got, if you can get for some of that cheese, you should be fine. But it is one of those, is like, I don't know if they were going to make it be a TV show or if it was a mini series, but one of the chief was,
I think they wanted to spawn a TV show.
Oh, there you
and
go.
And it didn't work. And, you know, but you had that stuff, and then, you know, it kind of rested for a bit until we had Chris Pine take over. And then I'm like, all right, well, he doesn't look the part at all to me.
You know, what's funny, my sister really liked that one, and she really doesn't care for spy stuff outside.
But I'm not saying the movie was necessarily bad. What was the first one he did?
This is quarterback. I have a situation. Somebody tried to kill me.
Jack, does work okay?
Yeah.
You know, you sold this as an office job.
Why don't you sit down? Now talk me through your very scary scenario. Keep in mind, I don't have your PhD.
Tokyo, London, the United States. It's gonna be a wipeout. We'll never see it coming.
You're not just an analyst anymore. You're operational now.
Jack?
I have to go to Moscow.
Why don't you want me to come?
Because I'm gonna be working the whole time. They play rough over there, Jack. Viktor Chernyshyn is unpredictable.
You Americans like to think of yourselves as direct. Perhaps you are just rude.
Perhaps you're just touchy.
Jack, you got another problem.
What are you doing here?
You lied to me for 3 years. Somebody,
come
you
on, of
the
course
CIA.
Not. Can we have a minute, please?
No. This is geopolitics, not couples therapy.
Partnerships are delicate, Mr. Ryan. Sometimes they end violently.
What the hell is going on here?
Sometimes the ones closest to us are the ones we should trust the least. We all have our secrets.
You think this is game, Jack?
They will bring us to our knees without even firing a shot.
There's a very real scenario here where we don't get out of this alive.
We are compromised.
If you find the truth, will you believe it?
It was after Some of All Fears, and so next thing you know, let's do young Jack Ryan again. But yeah, it's not going to be based on any of the books. Let's create a fictional mentor played by Kevin Costner, and then and it came out in 2014, and a lot of critics either liked it or really bashed it. But a lot of people not really much different than like an episode of 24 or Die Hard with a Vengeance, where he's like going in under a sewer chasing a terrorist, and I was just like, I just had fun with it. But I saw a lot of people who liked it, but much like, for whatever reason, like Some of All Fears, they really only enjoyed it when they resaw it for whatever reason. And I'm like, so why is that? I don't know why certain movies are more enjoyable in other circumstances, if it's just the when you see it or how you see it. I don't know. But yeah, it was interesting because at that point
I am. My mute like wouldn't work there.
Oh dear.
I was gonna say, my thing was that I didn't really know much about Chris Pine yet.
Oh really? I hadn't seen the new.
I had seen the new Star Trek.
Okay.
But I think it had Tom Clancy's name. It had Shadow Recruit in the title. It seemed like everything should be there for me, but it felt almost like too much Jason Bourne.
Which I think
is why a lot of people liked it, and I do think it was a good film.
And Kenneth Branagh is basically like doing his best Alan Rickman impression.
Yeah,
and you're like, isn't that
Are you the third brother from Die Hard?
Yeah. Jeremy Irons going to show up in this too?
That would have been fantastic. But yeah, it was a movie that I was like, okay, it's cool to see Tom Clancy coming back as something. I just don't know if this movie is going to have what it takes to really set it off. And then Chris Pine went on to Wonder Woman and other stuff, right? And more Star Trek. And even his first Star Trek movie, I love that movie. It's not Star Trek. It's Star Wars. Yeah. I watched it going, wow, they should have this guy direct Star Wars. Because this is the action, the way it's shot, this would be great for it. And then down the road, J.J. Abrams does do it, you know? So, and then it was kind of like it with me. I'm like, this is a great movie that's like a Bourne movie. I don't know how much Tom Clancy this has to me.
I think that's just it. Everything is, at that point, they're just going with giant names. And Kenneth Branagh, this is a hot take. I don't really think he's that great a director, but I do think this was fun because, I mean, Vic Armstrong, who also worked on the Indiana Jones movies, and I think possibly even some of the Harrison movies, but you know him also for being Harrison's stunt double on Indiana Jones and other big stuff with Dolph Lundgren in it.
What's his name?
Vic Armstrong. He's a well-known stunt coordinator, second unit director, and
stunt double.
Yeah, and double, if not a coordinator. And I know he did a lot of the action scenes for this, and even Jason Statham's mechanic too. So I think that's just it. It's like the action is fun, and yet I don't know. I saw some people doing the whole "it's too predictable." I'm like, but and one thing I notice now, just about everything that's like a spy movie just seems to just flop, and everyone instantly does the whole "oh, it's too much like Bourne Identity or Bond." So I think
we're at that point where they need to rest them again. Like even Bond in the 80s got like to the point where people were like, meh.
Yeah, it's like you got to do it in like stages, because like I love The November Man and a lot of people gave that one shit. And I was like, well, it's based on a bunch of 70s kind of spy novels, and it was meant as like a new franchise for Pierce Brosnan. And yet they're kind of like hard-boiled movies. Like Cops and Robbers movies seem to make decent money because you can easily say, hey, if you like Heat or Training Day, you'll like this. And it just seems like, for whatever reason, espionage just gets shit on, because half of it's just all visual, or people complain that they just have trouble following it. Like, they just didn't read much Frederick Forsyth or any other kind of Clancy author.
I do think it's hard to follow for some people, especially if it's straight up espionage stuff like what Clancy would write. I mean, side note, he's the reason I wanted to be an author my whole life. And now I've put out like 3 books because finally I'm like, fuck, I'm going to do it.
Anyone can do it.
But the sad thing is not everyone can make money.
Not everyone can make money, but at least everyone can write.
At least it's out there.
And get somehow, or even make a pitch if they're.
Yeah.
And I definitely, I had grandparents who, again, would read Clancy, and I think they gave up on him, I want to say, probably around The Teeth of the Tiger, where it chronicles Ryan's son, Junior, who goes to a campus and with the freedom to discreetly assassinate individuals who threaten national security. And it seemed like, at that point, like, Clancy was getting some criticism for, like, trying to do a lot of kind of pro Iraq war invasion kind of crapola. And I guess I don't know how much of that was just people not separating the person from the politics or what have you, and whatever read on there. I just noticed it was kind of more interesting reading his earlier stuff, like Executive Orders. And
yeah, I think I don't think I read Teeth in the Tiger, to be honest. But I think the big problem is the world hasn't changed. The people that watch movies have, right? Like, a lot of his movies dealt with issues at the time. You had like Cardinal of Kremlin. There were Afghani freedom fighters involved in it at one point because it was the Soviet Union and all this. You know, some of our fears. There were radical Islamists that wanted to make Israel look bad. All these groups. But now we live in a world where if I could write a book and a movie and come out and show a Muslim terrorist, it's, oh, how could you do something like that? Not all Muslims are like that. I understand that. I know they're not, but currently in the world, that's something that happened. Like if you'd written it 10 years ago, per se, if I come out now and write a book about Russia trying to start a world war and bring the Soviet Union back together, I'm going to get lambasted for insulting every Russian or something. You know, people jump all the time and think that because you're writing a bad guy of a certain type, you know, you're being racist or you're being this or that. It's like, no, I'm not. Right now in Europe, Russia's being an asshole.
So
that's the espionage and techno thriller books used to reflect the times.
You can even
In the 80s, everyone was okay in the 80s when everybody in the Die Hard movies was a German terrorist. There hadn't been German terrorists in like 20 years.
And that's just it. It's like,
that's okay, but
that's minuscule or.
Because anything that came out after September 11th that portrayed radical Muslim terrorists got lambasted as racist and ignorant. And it's like, no, it's based on current events. Whether it's right or wrong, that's who was responsible for what this is based on.
I'll go with that or Russian terrorists versus Mexican cartels or... I mean, I'll even go with the IRA, which I thought Patriot Games did a good job of, but it also kind of just got to where it's like, basically, you kind of got to do what kind of Some of All Fears doesn't get enough credit for, which is like, hey, let's at least have another spy who we think is working for the bad guys, but actually working, you know, for a secret spy agency who's, you know, he's mastered the terrorist infiltration, but... That's the other problem too, is like at that point, spy movies are just becoming more and more kind of video on demand, limited releases.
One
with Mike Douglas and Naomi Rapace called Unlocked, and it didn't make much money. And
I think another problem is that people assume when it's a spy movie and it deals with terrorism, whether it's German or Islam or Israeli or whoever, most of Clancy's books, there were people on both sides that were good and bad.
Yeah.
Like one thing his early books did was show that the Cold War and all these incidents in the background, there's a lot of moving parts that you don't see on the news that you don't understand. And it's a big chess match between the two. And generally in the earlier books, at least generally the end game wasn't, hey, let's nuke each other. It was, How do neither of us lose face, but we both get what we want?
Basically, in post 2002, like they were making a bunch of like Tom Clancy video games. There was all those Rainbow Six and Ghost Recons, and then
I don't know how much of involvement he had.
No, he just
by that point, because he died in 2013, and I thought that was a really sad day for me. But I really think that the last 10 or 15 years of his life, because it was getting harder to sell military fiction / spy / something realistic because of the climate where everyone like, you wrote about the Mexican cartel, so you hate Mexicans. It's like, no, the cartel is shit. That's who I'm focusing on. Like, I almost wonder how much it was him just going, you know what, you guys write it. I'm tired of it. And like you said, then the one...
Also gotten some pressure from CIA just saying you're revealing too much about our stuff. I don't know.
And you know, you got to wonder how accurate, I mean, supposedly most of what he wrote in the 80s and 90s was extremely accurate to what existed and what was going on.
As opposed to 24, where they were like predicting, but some of the technology only came out 10 years later. And they're like, well, we had stuff like that, but you solved what would take us 5 hours to do or 5 days to do. And I was a big player of the Splinter Cell video games, which I could
never get the stealth part done.
And the stealth was
hard, it was horrible on it.
It's so much fun to just go out and just cap everybody, but pretty much like I could never get into the books. They were written by a guy who was a pseudonym for different authors, and they went, the name that they consisted under was David Michaels, and they were just very redundant, and it was just one of those, like, see, what the game gets great is what you hear or see in the books of Clancy's, as well as his Jack Ryan movies. And it's like the games were just fun in that they were kind of playing to the, it was a friendly rival, kind of the Siphon Filter and freaking Metal Gear Solid stuff. And
yeah,
they, you know, they always sold it was pretty big.
Let's take a military genius that writes all these great books and make our own game that's going to be more realistic than those two.
1,000%. Even if, yes, technically you could probably see those night vision goggles, but let's just say for the sake of argument.
No, you can't. I don't think you can, actually.
Okay. So even better.
From what I understand from people I know that were in the Army, you can't. I've never tried, so I don't know. If I'm wrong, then okay, let me know. But I really don't know. My understanding is you can't, because what would be the point?
Yeah, what are those two? You couldn't see it.
What are those two green dots? Must be a raccoon. no, but like, what I will say though, as we move on, and you know, he passed away in 2013. I do think people have started to appreciate this style more now with the Amazon series. I also think that, you know, like the Chris Pine movies were a little too action orientated, and I do think people had issues with current events being portrayed,
and there was just too much out there to consume. Yeah. So if you didn't see those, they were often coming out on dump week or just before the summer, when it's like at that point, yeah, everyone was just kind of trying.
That's to, when you release an action movie. So if it's being released then,
can't be good, or it's got to star someone from a reality show or a crappy comedy. I don't know who's not believable as a lead, and I don't know. It just got to that point where I don't know how anyone made any freaking money in the 2010s.
I don't either. And like I said, like, and I'm not trying to say like all terrorists are one group or the other. Like, you know, I said before, if you write about extreme Islamic terrorists, there's a group of people that are going to yell at you. If you write about Russian terrorists, there's a group of people that are going to yell at you. If you write about Christian terrorists, there's someone that's going to yell at you. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's just fiction, you know?
Yeah.
I think one thing that the show has gotten right is it feels much more like a real, it's not a special effects extravaganza.
I think
Krasinski really wasn't like, I mean, I still don't think he's like a huge A-list name, but everyone knows who he is and he does good work.
Sure.
And he's a very average looking guy.
Totally. He has looks for the gals, and the guys like him because he's very funny and natural. And
he's not Chris Pine handsome. He looks like a normal person, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that helps bring that show to more people than the movies did.
And he had worked with Michael Bay through doing the 13 Hours of Benghazi raid, and Bay was working with him on this. I think the only issue with this show really is that it kept changing showrunners. Like Carlton Cuse of Nash Bridges and Lost Fame started out the show, and then they...
Well, I thought there's supposed to be two more seasons of it coming out, too.
Oh, 1,000%. It just basically, I think they got stalled by COVID, but before that, they had been stalled because they chose a showrunner. They chose, like, the creator of Prison Break to run the show, and then he dropped out over, like, creative disagreements. And I'm like, well, shit. So that put him back another year. And I'm like, so when is this thing coming out? Because like, this should already be technically on season 7 by now. Because like, it was an easy binge, just like The Expanse and Bosch were for Amazon.
Yeah.
So I know this. I was always able to finish each season literally in 2 days, and it would always be a fun. Hey, that guy! I worked with them as an extra. I know that guy. He was the mummy. It's like, hey, that guy.
I think the show also, because it's multiple episodes versus trying to jam everything in like a 2 or 3 hour movie.
Season episodes, yeah.
Yeah, 8 episodes. You can more accurately portray that. Well, like the first season does deal with Islamic extremists.
Yeah.
But you have more time to deal with it and not just like pigeonhole it, right? Like
lots of urgency
along the way. Yeah, along the way, you're seeing not everyone is the bad guy. You know, not everyone. You know, you could portray that easier in an 8 episode run than in a 3 hour movie.
And you don't know where it's going, and then when it does, you're like, oh, holy shit!
Yeah. I will say he Krasinski says that he modeled his character after Harrison Ford's portrayal, which I think is funny because in this Krasinski's a Marine veteran, well, Jack Ryan, and I don't think he was in the other one.
I thought he was playing it as the anti Jim on The Office, because like he starts off,
I thought so too,
looking over each other in the you know office bullpens, and even Wendell Pierce, he's still kind of bunk on the wire mode where he's just like, and they literally are looking at each other, and I think he just says, "Motherfucker, stop looking at me."
I think there's another point of we didn't look into or we didn't discuss either. When it came to the books, I think he started getting a little too Hollywoodish in some of them. Like in one of them, doesn't Jack Ryan become president at some point?
Yeah, like for like three different books. And I had a family friend,
and it's kind of like, how would he have worked his way? Like, because I want to say at the end of Some of All Fears, he becomes leader of the de facto leader for like a week.
Yeah,
because he relieves the president of his duties when he calls for a nuclear strike into the Soviet.
I think that was the one that my family friend mentioned. It's like, and like Ryan Jr. is going out stopping the bad guys and like shoves like a football down one guy's like mouth or some shit like that.
I don't remember. I remember
giant mall thing, and just hearing him describe it, I'm like, this sounds like a Canon Films.
Yeah, it was one of those things. Like a lot of the later books, maybe like you said, because he was getting pressure from the intelligence community to be like, hey, look, you're giving up all our secrets. Yeah, or something. But they became kind of like James Bond. Like Dr. No was not an over-the-top action like movie. It's corny because when it was filmed, but it's not over the top. From Russia with Love is more of a spy movie. Like a lot of the early Bonds were very even keel, like this could be a serious movie. And then like Roger Moore took over, and it's like, hey, we're going to fucking space.
Right, yeah.
Like, and, huh?
And it's just so funny seeing the Broccoli producers insist that they did not do knockoffs or everything, even though it's apparent, even in like Vic Armstrong, who I mentioned earlier, was stunt coordinator and second unit guy on the Brosnan movies, and he was just like, yeah, we went all Die Hard during Brosnan's era, and it's like you get to Craig's era, and it's like, whatever, one of them claimed in a PR release, we're trying to be like Jason Bourne. So it's like, yeah, who are you fooling? You're trying to be like everyone, even though James Bond is like the cool kid in school, and
Bond used to be the leader.
Right, and James Ryan can't help but try to be kind of similar to whatever other spy movies are like, but it draws you in with the whole, again, there's something imminent about to happen, and
Jack Ryan. There must be some kind
of way out of here. It will not be easy. Send the Joker to the thief.
Let's not forget that freedom is more powerful than fear.
I think,
yeah,
I know some very familiar writers on this show. One of them was Stephen Cronish, who had done episodes of Profiler, The Commish, MacGyver in 24. And I was like, what an interesting change for that dude.
The show had like 20 executive producers and like three producers.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
But it's, and I think maybe that's why it's as well done as it is. I think it feels grittier too. It doesn't feel as Hollywood. Like the Ben Affleck one felt Hollywood, right? Like the Chris Pine ones felt Hollywood. You had big explosions, you had action chases. Yeah.
I would even show it to certain friends and family, this show. And they were like, it took them a minute before they realized, so wait, they said Jack Ryan. So like, isn't that a character who was in Hunt for Red October, Clear and Present Danger. So it's just so funny how some people kind of get it and other people are like, okay, interesting.
The show seems to be more follow the original Jack Ryan novels from like, because Hunt for Red October was the Soviet Union, Red Storm Rising was North and South Korea. Clear and Present Danger was
it takes basically a show and to make everyone shut up and just enjoy.
Yeah, and like season two, they're in Venezuela, and season one has to do with Islamic extremists. It's much more how he used to write the books than any of the other stuff is.
And just telling someone who the main villain is, it's going to even take them a while because you can't find much Wikipedia info on it. And like you say, it's a maze.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how it would play in real life, just whether it's his books or a plausible scenario is like, okay, yeah, there's a weapons dealer, there's an inside man, and then there's five other different bombers, you know, for hire. One of them's like, two of them are Islamic. There's going to be one ISIS type, you know.
Yeah.
Like a mixed person. One of the other writers is even Daria Paladin, who did a pretty cool show called Condor. And as well as Shut Eye, which was a psychodrama for Jeffrey Donovan of Bruno's fame.
I mean, they definitely, I think, put more effort into this than any of the previous movies from, like, I'd say some of All Fears On.
Oh, totally.
Well, at least more thought process into how do we make this accessible? How do we make this done in a way that it's not insulting to this group or that group or this group? And it just shows all facets of what goes on. Because like 24, everyone raves about it. Now 24, that shit that happens in that one day, physically impossible.
Oh, it was always impossible.
When he's traveling, when he's traveling around the world, it's like, you're wasting 5 hours on a plane. No.
They always said the worst part was is that there's no way you're getting for LA traffic in that amount of time. You gotta, you'd be better just take a bike or run.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is like, no. And, you know, it is funny when you read how the interpretation is based off Ford's and the producer, Daniel Sackheim, it said, what was so great about the Harrison Ford movies was they were about an everyman hero. He was a guy who wasn't a superhero. He was heroic, but he was vulnerable. Okay, yes, I understand that. But your show focuses on an ex-Marine.
But you can't say Alec Baldwin wasn't trying to do that portrayal either, or even Affleck for that matter. Like, Affleck gets in like one fist fight. The rest of the time he's running around saying, I need to talk to the president, you know?
Yeah, pretty much the whole movie, that's what he's doing.
And Pine, I think the reason he got some hate for his version of the role was he had nothing to do except run. So,
well, Pine's was very much the Bourne Identity.
Oh, totally. And like everything you need to know is like it opens up is like with an off screen like copter crash and you're like discharged Iraq war veteran, you know, it's like now teaching as at a college and like, okay, got it. And the co-creator of this show was Graham Rowland, who had worked on the spy film Mile 22 and done some other work for Lost, Prison Break and Fringe and Almost Human. And so
they got the right people.
Yeah. People who, no matter the show, no matter who interprets it, like that they're still going with kind of moody kind of mystery is like, okay, so interesting. It's like they got some very intriguing people. And
yeah. Well, and I think the show is, like I said, it's much more well balanced between action and espionage and
the slow moments in general.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, I feel them just losing their shit in that room. That's why that scene stands out so much. Yeah. It's not the acting or the dialogue that's said per se. That's literally how it's staged. And
well, it's exactly, sometimes it's not what's said, like I don't remember if it was Endgame or which one it was, but there's a scene in either Endgame or the previous movie where Robert Downey Jr. is just Avengers. Sitting there. Yeah, I mean, it's one of them. And he's just sitting there the whole time, and he's not saying anything. And you don't care what the argument is that the other two are having. You're like, why isn't he saying anything? Why is Stark not? You're like, you're focused on him. Like, why is he not saying something? He always has something to say.
Yeah.
And that's how this is. It's, you had these moments where they're just together, and like you said, in the boardroom, nothing's really being said, but you could feel and know what they're thinking and what's going on.
Oh, totally.
And this definitely, you know, Because like the old, here's a perfect way of putting it. The original Clancy novels were very much like MI5 that we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago.
1,000%.
MI5 was not a high action show the majority of the time.
It was always a moody mystery, and then it would often end with like a bomb defusing or shooting an assassin dead, and the intense music is kind of driving the force behind it. And
the action was at certain moments when they would either be confronting suspects or
just like any good book, Thinking Man's thriller. And it's like, you get the gunplay in the last 20 minutes and that's fine. But it's
not Commando.
Yeah, it is not Commando.
You know, I mean,
constant Schwarzenegger muscle flexing and punching people, but it'll entertain. This is the rare kind of show where it could entertain the mindless crowd as well as the thinking man's crowd. So it's hard to explain to people because it is kind of visual, but it's also very articulate, and it just shows you that just unfortunately, you do need extra time to just kind of build a scene, while all these other versions were just, it's like the first 3 years, they were just very fast paced and had actors stealing the show in the good guy or villain roles. Like Sean Bean was great as Sean Miller in the IRA, thing. And it's just so hard to fathom, is like he survives in the book version. He just gets imprisoned. And it's like in the movie version, that would have rang false. And you let him get away or just get jailed because you're like, oh, I'm going to expect him to come back next movie. He's like, no, he's got to end on a bloody consequence. But
you remember how Rainbow Six ends in the book?
Doesn't someone get like gunned down like in a hostage situation?
At the end of the book, they have the, I think it's Rainbow Six, or was it Op Center? No, it was Rainbow Six, I think. Clark's team has the last of the whoever they're rounding up, and they're in the middle. It was Op Center, because it was about somebody trying to destroy the world and kill everybody so the few could take over or something.
Yeah.
At the end, they leave this group that wanted to do that. They leave them naked in the rainforest and say, okay, now you can reconnect with nature. And they leave because they didn't want to kill them, but they knew that they couldn't put them on trial because of all the stuff tied to what happened. So they're like, yeah, you can stay here.
Just don't do anything. Don't run. Don't leave this damn force.
You cannot get away with that at the end of a movie that goes to the theater. On Tubi TV, sure.
Oh,
you could do it.
Maybe a show, it's like a movie. Unfortunately, everyone wants, once you raise stakes, it's like everyone wants a certain comeuppance. We're just so used to seeing a giant slugfest in the last 20 minutes of every blockbuster now, it seems. And this one was interesting in how they'd even illustrate a supporting character who would play a bigger role later on. And I loved Abby Cornish already as an actress on the show Klondike, and even the RoboCop remake I thought she was great in. But I was like, here, it was cool just seeing her as like a love interest who realizes this isn't going to work, so they break it off instantly after one night stand with Ryan. And I just dug how, again, it's just a web of scum and villainy, so to speak. It's just, you just absolutely just, okay, that here's a Marine who's going to be doing some drone strikes. Here's a few other guys laundering money who are somehow connected and are going to actually be the most unlikely individuals to smuggle the CIA guys, especially in season 2 when they deal with Venezuela. You want to talk about a current climate. Basically, they do the premise of clear and present danger and then, but make it be in Venezuela. And then it pretty much started off just like the key moment in the movie where it's like Ryan's whole Secret Service agent team just gets wiped out and on his own. And I loved how everyone had their own kind of like little banking predicaments. And I love how the CIA chief is like, again, he's a Muslim, but he doesn't say anything because he knows everyone's just
on edge.
On the edge, got their own patriotic beliefs, and he's like, I'm just not gonna, again.
Well, he's not practicing also, though.
That's just it, too. But he just knows he'll be judged one way or another. It's like bigotry is still alive, unfortunately. And this kind of reminds me on how, like, I watch all the FBI shows by Dick Wolf now. Love them. But I'll still every once in a while see a neo-Nazi comment saying, "Oh, why is it always a white supremacist?" It's like, because it's dealing with crimes on today's world that are of a terrorist nature. So it's like,
yeah,
there's going to be people smuggling in AK-47s and doing incels, robbing banks and kidnapping young women. It's like, yeah, that's the kind of crimes it's focusing on.
To be fair, the crime styles don't change. It's just the extremist group doing it that do.
Exactly. And
like, I mean, you're either going to blow something up, kidnap a bunch of people, or hold hostages. That's generally what any extreme group from any group of people does.
And every crime show, you can always tell that someone has only literally seen a few episodes. And they're like, they never show this or that. I'm like, bullshit. It's the same thing on Law and Order when they do the whole, why does the framed black guy go to prison? Or why does the rich white guy go to jail? I'm like, whatever your political beliefs, I guarantee you, something that you say doesn't happen has happened on the show. I've watched every fucking
episode. It's been on for 25 years. Yeah.
They're going to change it up regardless of, I mean, and that show itself even had some you look at the season right after 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
Virtually any show after 9/11, they had a response to it. And at the same time, they also had a certain amount of what imagery they could not show. It's like, okay, you can't even show actual footage of 9/11. People are so riled up and angry. It's like, we want to encourage you silently to kind of have an answer to it, because anything for ratings war. And at the same time, it was kind of like when movies like The Kingdom or Body of Lies and even other spy and Iraq War set movies came out, they didn't make any profit, and some people were just like welcomed them, and other people were just like, nah, I don't want to be reminded of what garbage is already happening out there. So it is, like you say, it's a losing game. It's just predicting it, because like, producers still want to predict fame, even though it has to just, again, it has to just come naturally. And I think John Krasinski, he said, he and all the actors who worked on The Office said they learned more just being on that show than they did learning at their, doing intern work at Conan O'Brien or, improv work at the Groundlings. You know, they learned so much just because they would each even get a chance to even direct an episode and realize, okay, you're only as good as your imagination and what you're willing to do with, move the cameras around. Don't just get too cute for your own good. And just like they had to on that show, for instance, it's a mockumentary, but they had to remind each other to look around naturally. Don't look directly at the camera. Otherwise, just the wrong look gives the wrong feel. And I mean, he'd just done a horror movie, A Quiet Place. He wasn't a fan of horror. So he just thought, how about I look at something that would actually freak me out that I haven't seen anyone else done before? It's like, no one can really speak in the future, And I think that right amount of experimentation, again, just it readies people for trying something new and different. So like, for instance, had this show flunked for whatever reason, he would have taken something away from it and he could have afforded it. Because that's the other thing too. It's like, so many other people are just so desperate. Like, they're pressured. You got to get a giant TV show. You got to be in a superhero movie now. It's like, everyone goes on what's hot in the moment, and then they're so angry when it's not hot 5 years later down the road. It's like, you can't, it's just like the stock market. It's going to change. So stop trying to predict it. Just be ready for, save your money.
On your feet.
Senior Chief John Kelly is more dangerous and effective than any man we have in the field. The only thing he has more than kills are medals.
Somebody would like to talk to you.
John, if you're done in there, we need you to get back in the field.
Senior Chief Kelly, it appears you have a common enemy with the United States.
They took everything from me. My family. I got nothing left.
plan is a series of strategic attacks
all over the world.
We have to respond.
I need to be on that team.
Lieutenant Commander Greer, you lead the mission.
I'm even out the playing field.
CIA doesn't support any further investigation into your wife's murder.
Gotta put the heart out the battlefield.
They had no right to take so much from me.
Don't play no games, boy. What's the proof?
This is a goal mission.
Original bad boy.
Runner Jack!
Fort!
They know exactly where we've been.
They brought their warrant in my house. They're gonna play by my rules now. No remorse.
Cause I'm sucker dangerous.
Hey, was Without Remorse the one that just came out?
Yes, it was. Michael B. Jordan. And this time, like you say, they got the race right.
They did. They got the right actor. Michael B. Jordan's fantastic.
And I saw people doing the whole, I don't buy that. And it's like, they must have not read the Clancy books and known about his race. But I had no issue when that came out. I saw Taylor Sheridan, you know, who had done the Chris Pine movie. There's a Clancy. Yeah. Hell or High Water. He had just created Yellowstone, but at this point he was doing rewrites of some blockbuster movies. Like, everyone wanted him to rewrite all the, like, he rewrote that Angelina Jolie adventure film, you know, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Yeah.
And I was just like, when this was coming out, my sister and I kid you not, we made time for it. We're just like, you know what? And who wants to bet 5 cents, you know, since Amazon bought it a year down the road. And it was a big, big gambling war that made a few like Hollywood Reporter articles. And I was like, I will bet you money. They want the whole soup of the Clancy empire. So do you think they will cross over on the show or in a movie?
I hope they do. I think they should. I think in a world we live in with so much mixed media and so many people watching different things in different ways, why not? Like, I kind of felt the same way with like I can kind of see it both ways. Like, the perfect example is The Flash on the CW. Grant Gustafson plays a great Flash. In the movies, they use Ezra Miller, and everyone's like, why aren't they using the same actor? Well, my guess it would be, in that case, if you're going to do that, Grant Gustafson's going to want a lot more money to do the show then, too. So I can see the point of why they would not do it, but yeah. I don't think, I mean, when you're talking about they call it the Ryanverse, but let's call it the Clancyverse at this point.
Yeah, the Ryan
Clancy. I think you can afford to have characters cross here and there.
Like, the Rainbow Six verse.
The Rainbow Six. That just sounds awkward. No, but
that's too many words.
It's too many words. It doesn't flow. But I think you can afford to have small crossovers throughout the movies and the shows of this. I think that would work fine because you're not taking and making Clark the main character in a season of Jack Ryan. You would just have him interact here and there, you know.
Oh, 1,000%.
Kind of like how they did with the Avengers and the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They were crossover, you know.
Right.
Some of the Marvel
cameos, I think, work, and some of them don't. They're kind of intrusive, but DC really missed out. And I do kind of prefer the days when, say, an X-Files or St. Elsewhere kind of producer would get a little cute and say, you know, fuck, I created all these shows. I'm going to have a character
from
earlier shows just show up, and it'll be a fun kind of wink, wink. But at the same time, it still serves the story. I just happened to just last minute to say, hey, how about it be played by that one guy? And he's doing an uncredited role playing a character from the last show. So it's kind of all set in my own head, which is this damn universe. And I mean,
But the Marvel cameos were just cameos, right? Like, when we're talking about The Flash, we're talking about like a full on, he's going to do a full on movie and a full TV show.
Right. And it takes you a while to realize, hey, you know, it's like each time they've asked to do a proper crossover, they're told, no, keep it separate, even though they're referencing all this stuff that should technically be part of the canon. And
yeah.
And you just need to fire some of these studio guys and say, hey, take a chance.
Why have two separate universes? And I think that's what they could do with, I mean, it's easy to have one universe with Clancy stuff. Because certain things I think work better as show and certain as movies.
Oh, totally.
I will say Michael B. Jordan is fantastic in the role. The storyline, I get why they changed it because times are different, right? Like the original storyline takes place in the 70s. He's a former Navy SEAL. His girlfriend gets killed by some drug addict. You know, I mean, so
it was kind of like License to Kill, the James Bond movie. He just
it was written in 93. So people still remember the Vietnam War. You know, it was close enough, right? It was 13, 14 years out. Where if you're making that now, that also puts the guy that's going to be in the show at like, what, 80?
Yeah.
You know, so maybe you could have made it like from Desert Storm or the second Iraq War, something like that. Afghanistan, maybe you could have had him in. But yeah, I think, you know, I
remember what he was doing. He was like a private contractor at that point, basically.
He was a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
His pregnant wife gets killed in a car accident. And then he picks up a hitchhiker. He falls for her. And then she's a runaway drug mule or something. And the drug cartel finds them and shoots him and her and kills her while they're in his car. Then he's recruited by... who's he recruited by? He's recruited by... It's got something to do with going back to Vietnam to help rescue POWs or something. Been a long time since I read it.
Being unofficial Rambo, yeah.
Yeah. So I get why, like, a lot of that is not relevant today to today's climate and world, right?
It was a Punisher kind of novel. It really was. It was like, okay, so I'm going around and here's how I'm going to torture everyone. And every interrogation I do, I'm going to find out something new and be able to find the next guy to ice or kidnap and ask who set me up.
Yeah, I mean, but the movie with Michael B. Jordan, that's fine. I think it was well done. I think he's the right actor for it. Finally.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember, like I said, when I saw William Dafoe, I'm like, no. Yeah, no, sorry.
I thought he owned the role, but it's just so different from the books.
Clark. Yeah, it just wasn't the same character, you know?
I liked what Liev Schreiber did, but they underused him in Some of All Fears to where it's like, but it's not really his movie, is it?
Yeah, true. But in some of these books, some of the books he did have a relatively large role, though, too, to be fair.
Right. He's the creator of Rainbow Six, to where you kind of just wish, is like any movie they do, just call it just that, Rainbow Six. Blam! You know, explode. Yeah. And pull a Christopher Nolan. It's like, just have, like, or even a Mission Impossible. Just have a match lighting a fuse and credits explode on screen and... coming soon.
Well, if they're smart, that's what they'll do, though, right? Because Rainbow Six would be the more action oriented
part
of the Ryanverse.
Creator, do not hire, you know, someone who's known for music videos. Just hire someone like Antoine Foucault, you know, who, and Taylor Sheridan, you know, could easily take this over. He can do action and drama and just have a very well done, blood soaked adventure. Hell,
you have your espionage show right now, Jack Ryan.
There you go.
Now Rainbow Six gives you the ability to have your action show.
You want to cast it? Perfect. Have David Morse play the president. Have Ed Harris be a senator, you know, who recruits the program and has his doubts on whether he should pull it or not. And hell, have Melissa Leo be, I don't know, the joint chief of staff. I don't know.
Well, we'll find
security advisor. Perfect. Perfect. Vice president. Yeah.
I think we've gone over pretty much everything Tom Clancy-ish.
Basically it, because we see all these other movies and shows, and we're often like, when you see something like Olympus Has Fallen, you're like, yeah, it's so Clancy-ish.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's kind of the how you unfortunately have to do it. It's just like, now everyone doesn't even want a label. Like, you're, instead of adapting a James Patterson novel, you're better off just doing a serial killer thriller and making someone say, didn't James Patterson do something like that with 5 different killers going after a detective? You know, it's what you got to do, unfortunately. Is like, don't wait for someone to adapt a property, do something as good, and then that gets you in line to probably do the what's been lingering in development hell.
You know, at one point when Savoy Pictures bought the film rights for Without Remorse, they wanted Keanu Reeves to play the role as Clark, and he declined it. And then they talked to Lawrence Fishburne and Gary Sinise, and that didn't happen. So I'm glad none of those happened.
Yeah, see, again, what is it? It's like you got to go with the older star. And I know Lawrence Fishburne just showed up apparently with Thandie Newton and Chris Pine in like this spy movie called All the Old Knives, which is like a 70s kind of influenced spy movie. And Chris Pine joked that came out the same year and week as another spy film he just did recently with Kiefer Sutherland called The Contractor about a Black Ops unit. So I think in a way he is kind of being seen as that when he's not doing some giant like miniseries event or a supporting role. He's now apparently he just formed his own production company. So I think if anything, what we learned from all these Jack Ryan portrayers is they've all done their own movie studios. Like Alec Baldwin had a new company prior to his, incident film set. I'm not going to say it. It's already upsetting, but, and it just sucks because it's like no one, when that took up the media, I was like, does no one remember Brandon Lee? Oh, but you're making comparisons, but for all the wrong reasons. It's like, because
he's, who he is.
Right. And no one seems to know that, the armorer goofed up. It's
everyone
sitting where they're supposed to.
It's everybody that I saw posting from England. Oh, how could you have such an inexperienced armorer on the set? At some point, every armorer takes a job and they're still inexperienced. You know what I mean? Like to be the lead of it, at some point you're always going to be. I mean, yeah, she was probably a little younger than she should have been, but still, that weapon made it through how many hands and no one noticed?
Well, in this case, this guy was basically
not the woman.
Basically, this guy was. He had been complained about, and then they just silently just kind of fired him from every production he was on. And it was one of those is like, well, someone should have said something, but it kind of
somebody should have stopped him from working.
And that's what I loved about this new Jack Ryan show, because like they instantly kind of silently joke to you, and you can relate to it because you've seen office politics kind of like that before, where everyone does not want to work together when they first meet, and then they have to work with each other, and then they kind of get to understand each other. And we've had incidents like that. We often talk about people who we can't stand to work with each other. They're always late, always leaving a mess or what have you, farting in your general direction. And then there's some who's like, you get to kind of say, I don't love you. I don't like you. We're not friends, but I respect you. I can count it. And then I loved how that show perfectly illustrated it. Unlike, what we see today where again, people will just be like, it's like, they want to just fill the slots and ask questions later. But I just find it interesting how, it leaves Schreiber and William Dafoe do a lot of producing. Chris Pine owns his own studio now, and Ben Affleck is a big director. So it's like, if anything, like that all these guys got in common is that they basically just, they were going to get called up because they were just hot shit at the time. They were picking enough brains in front of and behind the scenes. And Michael B. Jordan, I think, owns his own company now or something like that. So
I think, like I said, I think we've covered the Clancy stuff pretty well. Yeah. So it was good talking to you, man.
Absolutely.
We should be back on iTunes in the next couple of weeks, along with on Spreaker, which is now owned by iHeartRadio. For sure. Attack supposedly movies. Version 2.0. We changed it up a little for our rebranding or our reopening, what do you want to call it?
Reboot.
So it should be on Spreaker in the next couple of weeks. Finally, I'm going to talk to my buddy about that to make sure, but we should be the first one posted should be John Carpenter's Dark Star. Which, if no one's aware, John Carpenter worked with Dan O'Bannon. They knew each other in college, and it was kind of a college project where it started that way. And Dan O'Bannon wrote Alien.
Mm-hmm. And Life Force. I just got the Blu-ray.
Yeah. So it's a fun episode. It's a good episode. It should be up soon, luckily. Finally, I get to say that.
Woo!
So, but thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a jacked up review show. It's a jacked up review show. Jacked up review show.